Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
One state getting tough for violating COVID-19 safety protocol. AFSCME standing strong. And today on the show, LIUNA in Rhode Island and the Transportation Trades Department of the Labor Federation. Good afternoon and welcome to the Monday, December 28th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, as well as Spotify. And we're also on Facebook, AWF Union Podcast. We have two guests on the show today. We're going to kick things off in a few minutes with Michael Sabatoni. Michael is the business manager of the Rhode Island local of Laborers International, our presenting sponsor here on America's Workforce. We're specifically talking about Local 271. Website is laborerslocal271.org. And if you go to their website, you will find they are the men and women who do the hard, the dangerous, and sometimes dirty work of building and rebuilding Rhode Island. Local 271 members are on the forefront of the construction and energy industries. We are united through collective bargaining agreements, which help us earn family-supporting pay. That is crucial. Family-supporting pay. Good benefits, actually great benefits, and the opportunity for the advancement and better lives. Members of Local 271 are experienced construction craft laborers that rely on a diverse set of skills performed on a wide variety of job sites. Members build roads, bridges, tunnels, transit, energy systems, as well as work on demolition and renovation projects. There's more. And we're going to get into all of it with Michael. We'll talk about the safety protocol for the members as a result of the pandemic, the outlook for construction. And they got a big region there that they cover. And there's a lot going on the East Coast. He's pretty excited. It was a crazy year. We all know. We want to say goodbye, good riddance to 2020. And everybody's looking forward to 2021, especially with the vaccine. We'll talk about that as well. But Michael Sabatoni will be joining us as our first guest later in the show. Greg Regan, Secretary Treasurer of the Transportation Trades Department of the Labor Federation, will be joining us. And I'm sure he's going to reflect on Larry Willis, the passing of Larry. In fact, we repodcast, both terms are appropriate here, Larry's last show here on America's Workforce. That was on Christmas Eve, and that's all archived on awfradio.com. That was the show from October. This has stunned so many in labor. But Greg will reflect on that and also talk about what Congress has allocated for transportation. $45 billion. Now, to you, to a lot of people listening right now, sounds like a lot of money, but Greg is of the opinion that it is not. It's a step in the right direction. Don't get me wrong here, but this is what he said. We applaud those Democrats and Republicans in Congress who came together in a bipartisan manner to support working families when they needed it the most. The economic relief package will provide critical funding for our nation's transportation system and its frontline workers, put emergency money in people's pockets through expanded unemployment insurance, direct cash payments, and other support, and ensure our health care system holds up as we mobilize to ensure the coronavirus vaccine reaches all Americans. Now, while these are absolutely essential steps for Congress to take, we must also be clear that the funding provided to support frontline transportation workers who continue to lay their lives on the line for this country is a Band-Aid and will only stem the bleeding for a few months. Furthermore, we are severely disappointed that this bill does not provide funding for the state and local governments and their dedicated employees that deliver vital services for Americans throughout the country. So that's his opinion. We'll get into more detail. Speaking of which, finally, President Trump signed that piece of legislation that was agreed upon earlier last week. He pretty much caved. He left town, what was it, a day or two before the Christmas holiday, saying that there was not enough money for American families. Instead of $600, he wanted $2,000. Hey, that sounds pretty good. In fact, I didn't realize this, but Bill Samuel reported on our show, Bill's the government affairs director for the Labor Federation, that the Democrats actually had that in the HEROES Act back in May. Got to keep in mind, these bills are very lengthy. This one here is over 5,500 pages long. Well, anyway, the Republicans figured, you know what, that's a lot of money to give to every American. So they went back to the original plan of $600. $600. And Trump reluctantly signed it. Now, going forward, Joe Biden, the president-elect, has said on many occasions that this piece of legislation is just a step. He's going to do more. Can't wait for January 20th. All right. So Greg Regan will be our second guest right here on America's Workforce. The Washington Department of Labor and Industries issued a more than $2 million fine against a farm company for repeat violations of COVID-19 safety guidelines. According to USA Today, the department began investigating Geber's farm operations after an employee reported that a worker had died of the virus and that the company was not testing the migrant workers who had lived with the deceased worker. Upon investigation, authorities confirmed the deaths of two migrant workers employed by Geber's. The investigation resulted in citations for unsafe sleeping arrangements and unsafe worker transportation. Turns out that the company apparently violated emergency rules requiring workers not to be allowed to sleep in top and bottom bunks unless separated into group shelters. Turns out that hundreds of the workers were sleeping in top and bottom bunks with no separation. None. Zero. And as a result, the farm workers have experienced devastating rates of COVID-19 infection, not just in Washington, but around the country, especially out in California. Oh, man, is that sad. 9 months ago, a deadly pandemic slammed into our shores and upended our lives. We all know that. This is a post from our dear friends at the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. And they point out, as much as the country has been shut down, AFSCME members went to work, treating patients, keeping school kids fed, doing whatever our communities need in these difficult days. Now, as we're celebrating the holidays, often at a distance, we're still working. Our country is depending on us more than ever, and we will stay on the front lines of the fight against this pandemic as long as necessary. However, Donald Trump and his allies in Congress don't respect our sacrifices as we put our lives at risk in service to others. They refuse to fund the front lines and protect us and our jobs. We are not done fighting. Come January, we're going to have a new president, a new House, and if we fight hard and win in Georgia, a new Senate. In 2021, we will continue the fight to fund the front lines. Yeah, keep in mind, the Georgia race is 1 week from tomorrow. Early voting started almost a month ago, and we're going to do more on that tomorrow. We're going to hear back from Rick Reitz. Rick is a member of my union, SAG-AFTRA. SAG is the Screen Actors Guild. AFTRA is the American Federation of TV Radio Artists. We had him on about maybe 6 to 8 weeks ago, and we were talking about the ground game in Georgia. He's based in Atlanta. Atlanta, as you know, is a game changer for Biden. He took the state of Georgia, and who knows, get those two Senate seats. We can say goodbye, Mitch. Oh, boy, would that be a good day. All right, we have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to link up with Michael Sabatoni, business manager of Liuna Labor's Local 271 out of Rhode Island. Once again, you're listening to America's Workforce.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to aflcio.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
Hey, we're back. It's America's Workforce. And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the fine folks at the United Labor Agency. They connect people with employment, 216-666-2185. And you can find them online at ulagency.org. Let's go to line number one, and welcome to the show, Mike Sabatoni. Mike is the business manager of Labor's Local 271, and their website is laborslocal271.org, and they are in the great state of Rhode Island. Hey, Michael, welcome to America's Workforce. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Ed. Nice to be on the show.
Well, I always like to get acquainted with new guests on the show, and I must say that Laborers International, the parent organization, and you probably know this by now, is the presenting sponsor of America's Workforce, Terry O'Sullivan. He's one of our regular guests here, and without Terry's help, we wouldn't be able to get this show on, and it's important to get a show like this on so we can get the side that counts. We're talking about the workers, the men and women who build America, and the laborers are a big part of that. So talk to me about Local 271. You're the business manager. You're also involved in the state building trades as well. And how many members? Give me all the data here, Mike.
So we're a couple of different hats. My full-time job is business manager, Laborers Local 271, with about 2,100 members in the construction industry in the state of Rhode Island. I'm also the business manager, secretary treasurer of the Rhode Island Laborers District Council, which has got about 11,000 members in Rhode Island, seven local unions, about 6,000 public employees, and about 5,000 private. And then on my spare time, I also moonlight as the president of the state building trades that has about a little over 10,000 members and 16 affiliated local unions in the building trades. So that's what I kind of do to keep me busy.
You don't even, do you have any time to sleep, my man? My gosh, wearing all those hats.
I'm a pretty fidgety guy, but you know, Terry keeps me pretty busy, and my cousin is the general secretary treasurer of LIUNA, Amini Sabatoni, and he's also the regional manager, and he keeps me pretty busy as well. So it's glad to hear that Terry and Amini sponsor fine programs like this to get the message out of working men and women across this country. So I'm proud to be a member of LIUNA, especially with the leadership that Terry and Amini provide.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt about that. Well, let's talk about, well, there's two things that we're concerned about here on America's Workforce, and that is the amount of jobs out there, making sure that whoever wants a job is going to get a job. And more importantly than that is, if you're going to have that job, how safe are you on that job? And there's been a lot of questions and concerns about that, especially with the pandemic. But let's start with the jobs. How's the employment sector in that part of America, in Rhode Island?
Well, coming out of the recession of 2009, we were one of the last in the Northeast to come out of it in the state of Rhode Island. You know, I have a saying, the good thing about the state of Rhode Island, it's a small state. The bad thing about Rhode Island is it's a small state. So depending on the circumstance, it cuts both ways. And with regards to the recession, it cut us pretty good. So we finally did come out of it, and we were, you know, moving along pretty good. And I know you had Andrew on today, Building Futures. That is our pre-apprenticeship program to divert young men and women, mostly from disadvantaged populations, into a pre-apprenticeship program. Then one of the 16 building trade unions that we represent, and I represent for our outreach, one of our outreach programs with helmets to hard hats and a bunch of other things that we got going on. But those numbers, we were looking to actually increase and double our capacity right up until the pandemic hit. And then as I'm, you know, aware in other areas as well, you know, end users are starting to pump the brakes getting into next year and beyond, especially on the vertical side of construction. So, you know, we're a little concerned with the effects of the pandemic. Not so much today. You know, especially in Rhode Island, we were able to keep our industry up and running, both the heavy and the building side. Through the pandemic, it was difficult, but I've got a very good contractor base here in the state, and working collaboratively with our labor management group. We also have, which I'm very proud of, one of the few, I think, in the country, I have a labor management group called Build Rhode Island, which is all of the building trade unions and the three big contractor associations, the AGC of Rhode Island, the New England Mechanical Contractors, and the New England Electrical Contractors Associations all sit at a table of a board of directors and try and steer and negotiate and do legislation and come together collaboratively for the unionized construction industry in the state of Rhode Island, and we work pretty well together. So having the ability to have a labor management trust like that on an industry-wide scale, I believe, is why we were capable of keeping projects open and, you know, really springing into action where necessary and having stand downs where necessary to make sure that we implemented the proper protocols with the recommendations of the CDC and the Rhode Island Department of Health, et cetera. So, but again, the long term going forward, I do think there's going to be, you know, a contraction in the industry. Most of the bigger unions are pulling back their estimates next year and beyond, maybe about 20% because of the pandemic. But on a good note, we were able to pass a significant amount of school bond questions at this last election in November, so that couldn't have happened at a better time. So I'm hoping that the public works will fill the void for a lot of the private and retail and some of the other projects that I think, you know, I hope come out of it sooner rather than later, but I think it could be, you know, maybe 2 to 4 years before you see significant, you know, maybe office space or hotel or things of that nature, just because, you know, if you're looking at the wave of what's happened during this pandemic, people working virtually and working from home. So I think it's going to take some time to catch up.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, there's a lot of companies that have found that they could probably save on real estate if they continue to have folks working at home. We'll see what develops there. I want to go back to the labor management cooperation you referenced. Now, mm-hmm. I know you've had good cooperation over the years. You worked hard to accomplish that. I'm just wondering, the pandemic, did that make it better? Did that say, hey, you know what? We've got a crisis on our hands right now. We're doing good, but we have to do better to make sure that our workers are safe and getting what they need. Can you address that, Mike?
I think it did, but I think the fact that we've had this this particular organization in place for almost 18 years now, and the level of sophistication we've been able to accomplish working with our employers, the level of trust, our success in the areas of legislation and you know, policy, both on a statewide level and municipal level, our ability to support you know, bond questions and certain things that stimulate the construction industry had us in a good spot when this pandemic hit, for us to just, you know, continue in that spirit of cooperation to to hit it head on. You know, it's the same thing like with the opioid crisis, what we've been able to do here as an industry in Rhode Island, not run away from it, but run right at it with labor and management together. And, you know, it's like anything else. It's a trust thing. And because we've got everybody, every, you know, major stakeholder in the unionized construction industry sitting in that room, both from the labor and management side, contractor side, we're able to accomplish some good things. And, you know, we have some very, very candid conversations. And, you know, sometimes we have some, real animated discussions. But the respect and the success and even just the participation, when I look at the effectiveness of an organization, I usually, the first thing I look at is when you take attendance on who's there. And I sit on a, you know, numerous boards and what have you. And if I go to a couple of meetings and nothing gets done, I usually assign someone else because I don't have time for it. And then the other thing is that I like to see the participation of people. So when I see names on a board of trustees or a list of you know, whoever's involved in what have you, and they don't show up or participate, then, and if there's quite a few of them, then that usually shows me the effectiveness of the organization, and I don't stay around very long. But as far as when I'm talking about some real important people in our industry that are there every month, and you know the attendance is in the high 90s at every meeting, that goes to show you the effectiveness of what we're doing and the subject matter that we're talking about, how relevant it is that that very important people make sure they're in that room to keep their finger on the pulse of what's going on in the unionized construction industry in Rhode Island.
I like what you're saying there. I'm wondering if you could package that up and send that over to Congress. Maybe we could get more things done. What do you think?
You got that right. I mean, one of the other things that I'm really proud of as well, you know, I'll work with the Chamber of Commerce here in the state. I've got a very good relationship with Lori White, who's the president of the Providence Chamber of Commerce, the largest chamber. And then we decided, you know, 10-plus years ago to put aside the things that we disagree on certain pieces of legislation, et cetera, and absolutely every year sit and say, what are we going to collaborate on? What are we going to partner on? And I probably have done maybe, half a dozen or so, op-eds in the paper with the chamber, Lori and I together on promoting, you know, whatever policy in a particular year is necessary that both business and labor, usually around infrastructure and incentives and commerce and, you know, and things of that nature that are good for business and are good for labor at the same time. So I'm really proud of that as well. And that emanates from that Build Rhode Island group as well.
Yeah, you're talking about bringing Democrats and Republicans together. We can have, you know, parties that have differences. I mean, we see that all the time. But you have to reach out because some people, they're not going to change their mind on a certain issue, but there's a lot of things they can agree on. And it sounds like you're doing the right thing. I often say you're only as good as the people you surround yourself with. And it sounds like that's what you're doing.
That's what we're doing, and I always believed that the building trades were kind of always in the middle of the political, you know, universe, I'll call it. You know, I remember I did an interview a year or so ago, and there were big fights on certain things with the far left and the far right, and someone had said, well, you're having an issue with the extreme left. And I said, I got an issue with anybody that's extreme. Extreme left is no better than extreme right. Nothing happens on the fringes. Everything happens in the middle.
Yeah, yeah, and that's where most of Americans are. Exactly, right
in the
middle.
That's where most of America is.
Yeah, yeah. Mike, I'm looking at my clock. I got to take a quick break. Can you stay with us for another segment? This is a great conversation to have, all right?
Absolutely. Look forward to it.
I love it. Michael Sabatoni, business manager of Laborers International. We're talking Local 271. You might want to check them out online. It's laborslocal271.org. And you can follow them on Twitter at Liuna Local 271. Liuna Local 271. Also, later in the show, we're going to check in with Greg Regan on behalf of the Transportation Trades Department of the Labor Federation. It's all part of America's Workforce. Back in a few.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes Liuna to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of Liuna, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyandFerraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
Hey, we're back. It's America's Workforce. And don't forget, you can check us out on various platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, as well as Spotify. When you get an opportunity, just sign up. And you can get our shows on a regular basis and eventually give us a rating. We'd appreciate a five-star rating. Let's go back to our live line. Rejoin Michael Sabatoni. Michael's the business manager of Labor's Local 271 out of Rhode Island. I want to talk a bit about infrastructure, and with Labor's, the General President Terry O'Sullivan, who's been a longtime guest on this show, has often come across and just expressed his frustration at Congress for, number one, not raising the gas tax, which hasn't been raised since the early 90s. I mean, we have a lot of work to do. And, Michael, you know this. As far as our infrastructure, our roads and bridges, the American Society of Civil Engineers has given us a D-plus rating. You know, for a superpower like the United States of America, I'm not very proud to say that. And I'm wondering here, especially now with the new administration, it's not going to happen overnight. We know that. But I'm thinking here, Biden was saying build back better. What's your gut telling you here? Do you think we could bring, we talked about the division, the Republicans and the Democrats. The Republicans say, we can't pay any more taxes. What do you think moving forward here? How do you feel?
Well, just first, I think Rhode Island would have taken a D-plus a few years or so ago, since I think we were ranked last in the nation at the condition of our roads, and especially our bridges, on how many were structurally deficient. So I commend Governor Raimondo. A couple of years or so ago, we passed a roadworks program to toll the large trucks in and around the interstate system and the connection routes in between, to have a dedicated funding stream to fix those 250-some-odd-plus deficient bridges as a start. And that was one of the things in the past that you heard me mention in the last segment, working with the Chamber of Commerce here in my state, business and labor, and then usually reasonable Republicans and Democrats would get together and say, all right, we got all these other issues, but this isn't one of them. You know we need, infrastructure. We need a modern infrastructure. The quicker I can get markets to goods to market is better for me as business. You know, it wasn't that much of a controversial thing. And lately, with the total dysfunction in Washington, it has been. And what I would hope to see, it's almost like anything else, like with a budget. There should be an annual funding stream that just can't be touched. You can go argue about all the other stuff, taxes and, you know, this, that, and what have you. But infrastructure should just be automatically tapped every year or for the long term. You know, we shouldn't have to wait years and years and years and then, you know, then try and swallow a $2 trillion, $3 trillion, what have you. That would always have been my, you know, opinion going forward. Kind of similar like states are trying to do, is like annually dedicate monies so that you can continue to not only upgrade and invest in a modern infrastructure, but you also need to maintain what you're building. For the longest time in the state of Rhode Island, we actually would build a bridge and then walk away from it and not put a penny aside on to maintain that bridge. And, you know, it's a hell of a lot less money to maintain it over the course of time as opposed to build a new one 30 years from now. Now, by the way, I like building new ones because it's a lot more work for the laborers I represent, but it's not fiscally responsible. So I hope at some point they just get to a point where they got an absolute dedicated annual, you know, number that just can't be screwed with. So that is the other thing. Departments of transportation around this country can have some dependability and know on what they can, you know, rely on so they can plan, because things take a lot of time, especially infrastructure, to do these projects, and some of them are pretty damn massive. So if you have some, you know, dedicated money and you know that the money's going to be there, then you can have better urban planning and infrastructure planning as you go. But that's my two cents on what I think.
And you mentioned the chamber, which is traditionally a conservative group of people that are united with labor on this. I know they've reached out to the AFL-CIO a number of times over the years saying, you know what, let's try to work together, but still nothing being done. I'm just wondering with the new administration, how that's going to pan out here, because you know we need it. And the other part of the story, and you know this, Mike, is the cost and the savings. If you invest in infrastructure, it's all going to come back. You're going to put people into good work, right. Good jobs.
Can't be outsourced.
Yeah, can't be outsourced. They're going to have good jobs. Those jobs provide good benefits. Those workers are going to pay taxes. That's going to go back into the economy. More shops are going to pop up. I mean, there's a reciprocal effect down the road. That's the part I don't get. I don't understand
it. Businesses are looking to relocate, and I know it's always, you know, call it a little bit of a beauty contest with chambers of commerce and incentives for hiring and, you know, what have you, and the relocation of companies, and it happens every year, especially with the bigger ones now. We went through it last year or so with Amazon looking for their next headquarters, and, you know, the states were drooling over themselves, well-deserved, to try and get, you know, that type of economic activity in their state. But even the simple investments in state and trying to grow the economy and grow businesses, the two things that they look at, what does the school system look like? And what's the condition of the infrastructure? I mean, this isn't rocket science. If you're a company looking to locate somewhere or expand somewhere, you're going to look at the education system in the area and the ability for you to find talented workers as you expand your business. And you're going to look at the infrastructure support you have around your immediate, you know, facility or campus. It's just how business is done.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to switch the conversation a little bit to one that's been sobering for a number of years, and that's the opioid crisis. It's touched just about every family in America, and it seems to have tapered down. I know we had it really, really heavy in the state of Ohio. I don't know what it is in Rhode Island, but you think about, especially in the construction industry, hard work, injuries on the job. Doctor says, oh, try this. And next thing you know, you're hooked, and things just go downhill from there. How are you addressing that situation in Rhode Island, Mike?
Well, I wish there was tapering down in Rhode Island and surrounding, but the only thing that's pushed the opioid crisis off the front page of the various publications is the pandemic. But we've had some of our deadliest months. I think May and June of 2020 were our deadliest months for overdoses since the opioid crisis began. And another startling statistic in this area is, and this would cover the state of Rhode Island and Massachusetts, on the two studies that were done by, respectively, by the Departments of Health in both states. 2019, one in four opioid deaths in Massachusetts and Rhode Island was a construction worker. So,
wow,
what did we do about it?
That.
And we knew, but by the way, we knew the numbers were, you know, forget about the debts. We just even knew about the crisis itself. So, you heard me mention our labor management group, Build Rhode Island, in the prior segment. And again, another testament to the ability of labor and our employers to come together in the best interests of our members, their employees, their productivity, their bottom lines, was to change our mindset of, you know, abandonment, or, you know, maybe sweep under the rug, or just, you know, not deal with it, was to, you know, hit it head on and embrace the fact that we had a problem and turn our whole mindset around on the stigma associated with, you know, addiction and the understanding and the education that it's a sickness and it's an illness, and how we deal with it, and get our whole population in the building trades here in Rhode Island, you know, educated on the pitfalls of it. And then if you do end up on that slope, how to reach out for help, and we will help you to remove the stigma that you won't be blackballed. We're not going to abandon you. You know, you do matter. We've got programs and programs on top of programs in place. There's all kinds of things that we spend a crap load of money on to help every single member and or their family, for that matter. And, you know, it's still an uphill battle, and we're at it constantly. You know, we're in the fact now that we've got Narcan and construction trailers in Rhode Island. We've got toolbox talks probably once a week to talk about the pitfalls of addiction and the, you know, how quickly you could get from, you know, a scrape or a bump. If you, you know, a couple of pills here could end up there, and how fast that pitfall happens. We've also embedded it in our apprenticeship training programs, our journeyman upgrade programs, our local union meetings. I've got my MAP coordinators that come every other meeting and spend 15 minutes talking to the membership, and it's almost like anything else we do with safety in our industry. It's got to be constant, because that's how you know, prevalent the problem is. And then, by the way, not even just in the construction industry, in society. And if you don't hit it head on and continually talk about it, and talk about, you know, and educate young people, or anybody for that matter, the pitfalls of it, it's, you know, could be exhausting, but I don't know any other way on how to deal with it.
Yeah, yeah. No, you got to stay on it. And it sounds like you are over there in Rhode Island. Well, let's do this again, Mike. I'm just about out of time. I got to join the Transportation Trades Department of the Labor Federation here. But it's been a wonderful chat with you, Michael Sabatoni, who's a business manager of Local 271 Laborers International, presenting sponsor, not 271. Maybe one of these days we'll get you on board as well as a sponsor.
You very well may.
Love talking to you, my brother. And let's talk in the new year and see if we're moving the needle in the right direction. How's that sound?
Yeah, I would love to do that. And it's been my pleasure, Ed, to participate in this program. And I appreciate it. And just you and all the members and the staff there, happy and safe holidays to you all, our members and our families.
Take care. Michael Sabatoni, Local 271 Laborers International. Quick break when we come back. The Transportation Trades Department of the Labor Federation. Once again, you're listening to America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with prostate, breast, or any other cancer after taking Zantac? You may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
Hey, we're back. It's America's Workforce. And don't forget, we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, as well as Spotify. And you can follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the fine folks at the North Coast Area Labor Federation, part of the AFL-CIO. Speaking of which, let's go to line number two right now, and Greg Regan is joining us on behalf of the Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO, which is a collection of 30-plus unions dealing with air, with trucking, you name it, rail, everything, anything that moves in America. And we have seen a lot of that happen, especially with this pandemic and how important it is to protect the frontline workers, the people that are delivering those packages to your house. And also now the vaccine. Mr. Regan, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today, my friend?
I'm doing all right, Flash. Thank you. How are you?
You know what? I'll be honest with you. I'm still shocked. I'm still in shock by the passing of Larry Willis. Larry was the president of the Transportation Trades Department, a regular guest, along with you, right here on America's Workforce, and we lost him a month ago. I guess he was an avid bicyclist. I didn't know that part. And he just loved to ride his bicycle around D.C. What do we know? It was just a car. Car swiped him or something? What's the details on that? What do you know, Greg?
I think it was really just a fluke thing. It was unseasonably warm here in D.C. And
yeah,
it was very crowded in the area where he was biking. And it was one of those fairly narrow one lane roads. And I think it was just a bad sequence of events that ended up with him, hitting a car. And it really is just incredibly tragic. I mean, he was a wealth of knowledge. He was so committed to working people, to doing the work at TTD. He knew more about transportation policy than anybody I will probably ever meet in my life. And it was, it's a massive loss for the labor movement, for working people across the country. And personally, it's just been a very difficult time.
And so young too. He was only 53 years of age and so much energy. In fact, we rebroadcast and repodcast his last show, which was October 26th. We did that last Thursday on Christmas Eve. And Greg, it was eerie. At the end of that, he and I were talking about the election, which was just a week away. And, Biden was ahead in the polls. We were very optimistic, much like everybody in labor, because of what Trump did to labor over the last couple of years. And it was like he was excited to talk about the next administration. And that was the part that that really, really took me back. But a great guy, a hell of an imprint that he made on for working families. There's no doubt about that. Well, we have to move on here, and there's a lot to talk about. I want to get into, I guess, Trump last night finally signed the stimulus bill.
Yeah.
There's so much you can say about that, but I don't know. I don't know what's going on in that guy's mind. But the bottom line is there's a carve out for transportation workers. I want you to speak to that part. What do we know? I did read a statement from you earlier in the show that it's nice, but it wasn't enough. Let's pick it up right from there. Go ahead, Greg. What do you think?
Look, this bill is going to save jobs and keep our transportation systems running for another few months in a way that that needed to happen. It's got money for aviation. It's got money for Amtrak, for transit, for state highway construction. So the projects that are either slated to be done or that are in the process of being done will be done. And there are, in many ways, really good labor protections in there. I mean, the PSP program for airlines, that makes sure that the money goes directly to payroll and benefits. There's similar protections for Amtrak, for transit workers, for bus companies. I mean, they have they've taken our suggestions when it comes to how to make sure that the money goes directly to the workers, and they've implemented it in these bills. The only problem is that it's really just scratches the surface of what is ultimately going to be needed to see us out of this, the economic situation we're in right now. And, it's only $45 billion, $900 billion bill. So it's a small part of a larger package, and we're supportive of a lot of the other aspects of this bill, including the unemployment benefits and the vaccine distributions and all the other stuff that needs to happen. But when we start looking at how our country is going to, as we're delivering the vaccines and making sure that it's available to people all throughout the country, but also as we start to see ourselves through an economic recovery, our transportation networks are going to be critical to that. And that means our transit systems are going to be able to bring people to work. And in order for that to happen, they need to survive this fallow period that we've been going through. It means that when transportation and tourism and aviation starts getting up and running, that we have the workforces in place to be able to meet the demands that people are going to see here. We need a national passenger rail network that will provide another transportation option for people between major cities. So this is really important. It's important that he finally signed this bill. I don't know why it took him this long, but that is between him and his television, I suppose. But this is a really big deal. But we are going to need early in the Biden administration, we're going to need another economic relief package that really is geared towards infrastructure and transportation and is the type of economic stimulus that gets our country moving again. And not to be too punny about it, but that is the key to it here.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Biden has been pretty vocal about his Build Back Better program. He said that all through the campaign, and we'll see how far that can go in the Congress. I know he wants to be very aggressive. Well, let's get back into the money that's in this legislation now, the $45 billion. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you what you think it should be. Let's go there. I mean, the 40, it's almost like that's a down payment. Where do you think that number, if you want to really be serious about our transportation infrastructure, where should that number be, Greg?
Well, we were talking, we've been very vocal about our requests to Congress for the various modes of transportation. You know, this, for one thing, this doesn't talk about maritime transportation. There's no money in there for instance, for the Maritime Security Program or, which is an important program that allows us to keep a U.S. flag fleet functional here. We called for $32 billion for transit across the country. This has $14 billion. So, that's barely a third of the money we think is going to be necessary. For Amtrak, we were calling for $5 billion. There is $1 billion here for Amtrak. For airlines, for the payroll support, which is again, it's a common misconception. It's been sort of portrayed as airline, corporate welfare. But the way that this program is written, it goes directly to workers. This is payroll and benefits. This isn't going towards CEO pay or for stock buybacks or anything like that. This is payroll and benefits for the frontline employees. We called for $25 billion, and this has $15 billion. So again, it is important. It's getting there, but across the board, I think there is going to be there needs to be a recognition about how important these systems are going to be to getting us through the end of this thing, and this is a start to that.
Mm-hmm. I'm just doing the math here, and I'm looking about $30+ billion short of where we should be. And that's still probably not enough when you take a look at the whole picture here. All right, moving forward.
And we're also not looking at sort of the broader infrastructure investments that are going to be real job creators when we're through with this. So, if we're talking about what we really need to do, if we're putting more money into the Gateway project in the Northeast Corridor, if we're putting money into the long-term investments in our rail system, if we're talking, there are a lot of opportunities here to create jobs and do real economic stimulus in the right way that I think are on the table. And I know that President-elect Biden has talked about when he was doing the stimulus package in 2009 about how he wished there had been more for transportation infrastructure. And that's that's what we're prepared for right now. It's making sure that the money, when we do decide to do something big here, that the money is going to an area where it's going to have the greatest impact from a jobs perspective.
Exactly. Yeah. And not loaded up with a bunch of garbage in there, tax breaks for multimillionaires. I mean, I just wish they would focus on jobs. Jobs, jobs, mm-hmm. jobs, jobs, infrastructure. We need money to go to our infrastructure. All right. Let's segue over to the new designated transportation secretary. And that would be mm-hmm. Pete Buttigieg, who was running for the White House. And he did. I'll tell you, he surprised a lot of people, surprised a lot, including myself. I'm reading a lot of good things about him coming to the fold here. I'd like to get your opinion. What do you think?
He has a wealth of energy and is an incredibly smart person. I mean, that has been demonstrated. You don't become a major presidential contender at his age without having a lot of really strong attributes and a lot of deep intellect. And he is clearly a policy person. So, I mean, he doesn't have he's not like a DOT veteran or someone who has been through the Washington transportation circles, but he does have a real thirst for knowledge when it comes to the policy that he's going to be taking over, and he wants to he wants to get this right and really serve this role the best he can, and I think he's going to do a great job at it. We've needed somebody in that role who understands the scope of the challenges facing our country. We've had 4 years now of we're either stagnant or going backwards in a lot of important areas when it comes to our country's transportation policy, and he recognizes that, and he's going to attack this with an intellectual curiosity and a vigor that is sorely needed right now for our country. And I'm excited to work for him. I spoke to him and he, you know, one of the things I said was Larry would have been so excited to have a policy nerd in that job, and he would have been just bubbling to the surface, eager to dig into all the details, and I share that enthusiasm. I think this is going to be a really great DOT secretary for the country.
Larry would say something like that, a policy nerd. I love that. I like what John Costa said. John is the president of the Amalgamated Transit Union, and I'll tell you, he suffered a lot of loss from transit members because you're driving a bus or a subway, and you got people who have COVID, and there was very little protection. I think they lost almost 100 members, many of them in the New York City. But the bottom line is, he liked Pete's support for unionized transit workers, and apparently, in the summer of 2019, while on the campaign trail, Buttigieg met with their striking members, and I guess this was outside of Martha's Vineyard, and he listened to every one of their concerns on the picket line. And I tell you, that's refreshing just in itself. Hear from the workers that are doing the job. That's what we want, right?
Yeah, and I mean, his transportation platform as president, and I know, these things are... If you look at presidential platforms, a lot of times there's a ton of platitudes. There's a lot of people who are, language like we will support, we want to have a better transportation network, better roads. It's a lot of broad speech. His platform got into a level of detail that frankly is rare for a presidential candidate. I mean, he was talking about foreign repair stations in his presidential platform, which is, we can barely get members of Congress to talk about that issue, which is vitally important, but it's really in the weeds. He had a real foreign repair station platform. He talked about the need for of transit workers from assault perspectives, and also across the board. He really not only spoke to the issues on an investment level, but on a worker level. And that's the mindset that we're expecting him to bring, and we know he'll bring, and we know that President-elect Biden wants to bring to that position. So, he is certainly already shown a capacity for the work, and for the issues and an understanding about the fact that it's the workers that are driving everything, that a real national transportation policy has to be geared towards the people who are making it happen. And he has really shown that is where his mind is at when it comes to approaching these problems that we have right now.
What a change. Gotta love it. All right, Greg, we're going to leave it on that note. Greg Regan, Secretary Treasurer of the Transportation Trades Department of the Labor Federation, TTD.org, for more information. Will you enjoy the rest of 2020? Can't go quick enough. We'll talk to you in the new year, okay?
Okay. Thanks, Flash.
All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, the latest from UCOM Blog and Chris LaGrange and the Georgia Ground Game. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.